Today we have a very special interview with a guest from Belgium who is the head, a chaired head of the EAO, International Academy of Osteopathy. Why this organization is important, why we have to change the way how we see osteopathy and the vision for osteopathy. This all will be discussed in this podcast. It will be very interesting just for you. Stay tuned and listen till the end. Hello and welcome to our podcast, Medicine 3.0. Today's episode is going to be in English because our guest, Jörg van der Loop, is an international guest. He's the director of the International Academy of Osteopathy and will tell us how exciting it is to actually be in that position and a bit more about his background and his motivation for osteopathy. Jörg, would you like to also introduce yourself a bit and tell us who you are, what you do, and why you do it?
Yes, sure. Thanks, Ivan, for inviting me, and I'm very happy to be here today. So, as you mentioned, my name is Jörg van Overloop. I'm not actually the director, but the joint principal, because it's not only me. We are doing it with two. I'm running the academy together with Grégoire Lazon. He is also the founder of the academy, the IAO, which is now established for a very long time. So I'm based in Belgium, in the city Ghent, which is a very nice city to live in. And actually, I'm trained first as in medicine. And then after my training in medicine, I continued because I was very inspired by the philosophy and the principles behind the osteopathic medicine. So I chose a career to become an osteopath. And I attended the academy myself to become an osteopath. And after this, I also completed the Master of Science degree in osteopathy. But even alongside my trainings in osteopathy and medicine, I also have a passion for anatomy. For me, anatomy is where it starts. And therefore, I also did a Master of Science in anatomy, which gives me a good foundation to think in my basic principles as an osteopath, but also keeping in mind the anatomy and the physiology of the human beings. And this makes my career path a bit different than others, but I like it to be in that position. And as you mentioned, so since last year, since January 2025, I had the great opportunity to become joint principal at the IAO. And therefore, I'm also currently attending an MBA training at the University of Maastricht to give me that foundation to be a good leader and to offer the academy a good future. And I strongly believe we are on a good track there. But yeah, a lot of nice things are happening. And again, thanks for inviting me. So I'm very happy to be here with you today.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here today. Let's dive a little bit more deep into your background, let's say, in anatomy. Because, as you mentioned, you had also a background in medicine and you've done different things which are not really related directly to osteopathy. But what was your main motivation to actually go into osteopathy and continue on that route? So most people imagine under osteopathy manual therapy, like manual treatments, and it's less theoretical and actually a bit very practical. Like, what led you on that path and why osteopathy?
Thanks for that question, Ivan. There are actually many questions. So I'll kick off with the first one. I strongly believe that there is a lot of similarities within my training anatomy and medicine, because what I learned there, I also use in my daily practice as an osteopath. So there is a strong connection, and we really need anatomy to understand our profession as well. I think to answer that question, I have to dive a bit more in my vision on osteopathy. And when I think about osteopathy today, I see first and foremost it more as a clinical healthcare profession, not only as manual therapy, for example. Not a belief system, not a fixed philosophy, and certainly not a collection of techniques, as you mentioned. Osteopathy actually only makes sense when it's grounded in responsible clinical reasoning and with a deep respect for the patient who is sitting in front of us. And for me, it means that being an osteopath starts with understanding of that human body. So like you said, with anatomy, with physiology, but also with pathology, what I learned in my medical training, and using that to understand and to make safe clinical decisions. My strongly belief is that what defines us as professionals is not what we do with our hands only, but how we think, how we assess risks as osteopaths, and how we can decide there is a treatment who is appropriate at all, or if we need to refer a patient. So also knowing our clinical expertise and where it ends is very relevant to me. And I strongly believe that osteopathic care should also and always be explainable to our patients, but also to our colleagues and also to the wider healthcare system. And if we cannot clearly explain why we do something, then we should be willing to question it ourselves. That's, to be honest with you, weaken osteopathy at all, it can strengthen it. And to come back to your manual therapy question, well, techniques, in my view, are tools, and manual therapy is one of these options. And they are important, but they are not our identity. I think that treatment should never be about applying a model or about defending a theory, but it should be more about like responding to the individual patient in a specific context. So when that same patient comes back, you might choose a different treatment strategy. Is of course about absolute central to this vision. And it's not a limitation of osteopathy, but it's the foundation. It can be seen, in my opinion, as a major profession that reflects critically in its own practice by thinking in indications, but also in contraindications, and the moments when referral is the best clinical decision we can make as an osteopath. I think this might answer your question, maybe a bit too long. But
long history, and specifically coming from US, where back then the founder of osteopathy was more religiously inspired. Where do you think, which concepts are more mystified or oversimplified, which you see differently today?
Well, if we go back to the historical part of osteopathy, of course, it comes from the USA. It was Andrew Taylor Still. We all know that. But of course, the context was totally different. In these days, medical care was totally different. It was about bloodletting. It was about very simplified surgical procedures like amputation, for example. So we can't compare it with today's medicine, today's medical care. So there is already a huge difference. But anyhow, it made sense that Andrew Taylor Still was looking to the total body, not to a simple anatomical structure, but to the integration of all anatomical structures within that human body, and not to forget the anatomical variation. And this is something which seemed to be overlooked at these days, but now, as we are doing much more dissections, we see that it does make sense. I never have seen a single human body that was the same. And what you see in an atlas, in a human atlas, is just a representation of a human body. And this makes it sometimes a bit strange for students if we start not arguing, but discussing with them, like, hey, but there are other options, that it becomes a bit complex for them because they don't understand what it means that there are so much human variations within that anatomy. And even for us as anatomists, it's difficult because when we do a dissection, it's always different. So that's an aspect that came from Andrew Taylor Still already and is still until today very useful for us and should be used as an osteopath to be critical on the human body, to be aware of that anatomical variation, and to not forget that, of course, today we also look into science. Yeah? Science plays an essential role in this process. And of course, it does not replace any historical background or clinical expertise, but it helps, I think, to sharpen it. And today we see that many schools are still teaching anatomy. What is now a lot implemented is a tensegrity model, how we look to fascia, the fascial structures of the human body. A lot of research is there done today. So there will be a lot of changes in the next years, I guess. Which also will change and maybe sharpen our therapeutical vision as an osteopath.
So what I see as a very common critique of osteopathy, also something that you had mentioned, that many people say osteopathy is not evidence-based. There are no studies which can tell that, for example, craniosacral therapy has an effect, or there's just placebo. Can you go a bit more deep on the role of science in osteopathy?
Yes.
Where do you see it heading as soon as more and more research is done and people are a bit more aware what is actually possible with manual techniques and osteopathy and the concept at Yale?
Yes, very relevant question, Ivan. Thanks for asking again. Well, it starts with the educators, with the schools. And if we want that science happens within the field of osteopathy, we need to train our osteopaths to be able to do research. And therefore, the IAO stands for that aspect a lot. And that's why we offer also now from next academic year onwards, the Master of Science educations only for our students. I think it's known that when you follow in training as an osteopath, you receive a DO degree, which means a diploma in osteopathy. But on top of that, we've chosen as a school to all our students the Master of Science training, just to make sure that they are trained from that scientific perspective as well, that they are able to think about research papers, to be critical about research papers, and even to. So that's a very important thing. And I'm very proud that I can be a joint principal at a school where this is so an important thing. Now, when it comes to science, I think it's important to be honest. Science in osteopathy is not easy. Because we work with, for example, complex biological systems. We work with highly individual patients. We work with interventions that are not context dependent and interventions that are operator read osteopath sensitive. Yeah, this makes classical research models challenging to apply and simple answers, in my opinion, a bit unrealistic. But however, and this is an important thing, that complexity is not an excuse to turn away from science. It even means that science does not give us a recipe for treatment. But it provides us a framework, and this is an important thing. It provides us critical tools. It provides us a shared language. To speak about that language, we are now today, in my opinion, at least, we are missing that. We all speak different languages as osteopaths, which makes it difficult to between osteopaths, but also between other healthcare professionals. So research helps us to ask better questions, to recognize limitations, that's important, but also, and that's what we do at the IAO, to continuously refine our clinical reasoning and to be able to trigger our students to think, and this is an important step for me. Clinical expertise and scientific thinking should not be seen as opposites, but we see it at the IAO as complementary. Yeah, so that's a bit my vision. I see the need to be comfortable with uncertainty for sure. It's always difficult in science if you're dealing with many uncertain things. And osteopathy is not about having absolute answers, but about a bit navigating the complexity, but also remaining curious and be willing to adapt. To adapt, a very important word, when new insights emerge. And that's not only by doing research, but also by reading research and by collaborating. So we are always aware of new insights within the scientific field.
If you could delete or remove one anatomic or theoretical misconception in osteopathy, is there something you would consider in the current state of affairs?
That's a difficult question to answer like that, but not any concept, I guess. What I would like to redefine and what we do at the IAO is that today I see if we learn palpation skills to our students, that a lot of students, they say, oh, I feel this anatomical structure. Oh, I'm now palpating the pylorus sphincter, for example. Or, oh, and now I'm feeling. We can't say that. So clearly. So that's why I would like to ask that we from now on use like I'm palpating in the direction of an anatomical structure. And that if you are unsure about what you're feeling, that you just accept it. Because there are so many variations, you're never going to find it as you will find it in an anatomical atlas. And be okay with that. Accept it. Accept the limitations. We don't have X-rays. We don't have medical imaging at our facilities. So it needs to come from our hands and from our background, which should prepare us to be able to palpate, of course, the correct things. So don't aim that you can always feel everything, but aim that you're palpating in the direction of something, being aware of your own limitations.
That leads also to the question, like, how can you actually evaluate if someone has actually understood a certain technique, a certain concept? When is the student ready, and how can you ensure that are they actually doing what they're supposed to do, and if the technique's having an effect or not? Like, what systems do you use at the EAO or personally?
The most important system we use, or if you can call it a system, is in-person trainings. Yeah? So all our modules we do are in-person. This allows us to have that one-on-one contact with our students, but also limiting the amount of students who are in one group. So we are able as teachers to guide them as good as possible. And guidance with clear explanation and good theoretical background are key to make a transfer from the knowledge to our students. And once we can make that transfer, it's up to them to continue learning by applying it not only in that module, but also in groups where they practice with other students. So that's why we stimulate peer intervisions, where our students meet each other on a regular basis, being able to reflect on their learning process, but also on their theoretical questions. And once they are well trained in their anatomical, biomechanical backgrounds, then we do the transfer in small groups, one-on-one from the teacher to the student, allowing them after it to practice the new techniques they have learned, but also giving them the right advices, for example, learning, not only in that module. And when you come back, for example, in a clinical work weekend where they can rehearse, refine their techniques under the guidance of a teacher. And that's a bit of a learning process. This is also implemented in the way we put the curriculum within the IO. From year one on, the curriculum will be a combination of parietal modules like the hip, shoulder, neck, combined with some visceral topics, for example, pelvic organs, some craniosacral topics, some neurology, and some integration. And this allows them to train their haptonomic skills over these years. Us, all our students are physiotherapists or medical doctors, so they had already a previous training. They work on a daily basis with patients, and most of them, they are experienced, between brackets, with parietal modules, so it's with muscles and bones and with palpating these structures in their clinics. So there it's less challenging for them. But we also need to learn them some visceral techniques or craniosacral techniques. And therefore, we already start early in their training. So we allow them to have these years ahead to train their haptonomic skills, which are totally different when you need to palpate the visceral structure compared to a muscle or a bony structure, which is kind of basic haptonomic skills. And that's how we see the vision, to start early with it, to allow them a good transfer, small groups, to put them in peer intervision groups and to let them reflect on their learning curve. So how are they processing, and be reflective on that? That's also a very important part in education. Because if they're not reflective on it, they even don't know if they're going in the right or in the wrong direction. And then it's up to us to get them back on track.
So where do you see as if I'm correctly, you're also the guardian of quality at the EAO? And as you mentioned, it's a very complex process that students have to forego. I mean, if you teach more and more students, the quality over time and with different teachers and everything goes down. But there are certain measures that you can take to prevent that. How do you ensure that the actual quality of the teachings and the quality of how students perform?
Within the IO, we have multiple different stakeholders for that. Of course, we have the teachers. When I look to the teachers' perspective, what we do is we train our teachers. For example, in Belgium, but also in Copenhagen, we started with a trainee program. It means, and also in Germany, actually, we kicked off it last year. We're starting with a trainee program. In that trainee program, over the run of one academic year, we train our young, new teachers to become a professional. This allows us to have a good quality in regards to our teacher profiles. Also, the recruitment of teachers is essential because we're looking for professionals who are also well-trained and have some knowledge already. So therefore, we are looking to the right profiles to recruit within our academy. If I look to the students, they always have the possibility their feedback after a module. This feedback, of course, is very essential for us because it brings back their experiences during a module. And if something happens there or if they have any suggestions, we will always overlook it to see if we can implement it or if we see a need to change something within their teaching modules. And then, of course, we have a lot of collaborations with external audit companies. For example, we hold an ISO quality label within osteopathic education. So it means that an external company will look at us to governance the quality within our organization. Also, the processes on the administration part, how we do it as a company and how we offer our trainings are part of that. And as you might know, have an external academic collaboration. So the IAO has a collaboration with Bucks University, so the BNU. It's Buckinghamshire New University. It's a university just outside London. And we work with them together to have an academic recognition of our degree, which is a Master of Science degree, 120 ECTS Master of Science degree, I have to say. And of course, they're also setting their academic standards on to the IAO. So we have to fit in there as well. And they are really keeping an eye on all of our processes. We need to report back to them their governances, the quality within the IAO as well, mainly from an academic perspective, making sure that the quality we deliver at the end of our training program is worth the title of Master of Science in Osteopathy. And to finish, one very last important aspect to governance the quality is that all our students, of course, have to pass exams every year. Once they have completed their training, they finish their education within the IO with an FCE, which is a final clinical exam. And during that final clinical exam, we are looking to the quality of the student at the end of their training and if they are ready to start a career as an osteopath, looking to pathology, basic skills, safety, but also if they are able to work and think as an osteopath using the models we gave them over the last years they were with us. And I think all these aspects together make sure that we can be very proud as IAO that the quality we deliver is good, is strong, is solid, and is even getting better over the years because we implement the experience we have in our teaching to make it even better. And I think we have to agree that education changed a lot over the last years. Students are demanding something else that they demanded years ago. They request much more flexibility. They are much more aware of their own rights. And we hear more feedback from them, which we are very happy of. And we try to always look into that feedback and implement where needed, making our curriculum and the way we train students is always modern, inclusive, safe, and ethical correct. And we are currently even thinking about future plans as well. I'm not going to tell anything about it, but we are not just sitting here waiting until new opportunities arise. We are right in the middle of it, and we are very motivated to continue doing that.
Since it is also within the name of the Academy, International Academy of Osteopathy, offer programs which are DO programs, master programs, which are offered internationally. And the current state of affairs is that osteopathy is not recognized in every country. For example, in Germany, you need to do an additional training, you need to do a healing practitioner to fully mm-hmm. practice osteopathy. In Swiss, where do you see the recognition of osteopathy or osteopath as a profession in the future? And how does EAO currently deal with the fact that osteopathy is not recognized? Even if a student finishes the training, they cannot fully practice their skills without having additional certificates or education?
Very good and I think very relevant question. First thing that I have to explain is that we as IO, we are not the one who is taking care of the regulation and the recognition of the profession. We are making sure that the degrees we have are from an academic perspective recognized. So academic recognition is what we have to do as a school. And that's what we do with the collaboration with, for example, the BNU. So we make sure that our students receive a Master of Science degree from an academic perspective recognized by an official university. It doesn't mean that if that student is traveling to a country with that diploma, that he or she will automatically be recognized as an osteopath, because that's another part of the recognition. That's the recognition of the profession. And that's something that is depending on every country and the regulations within these countries. So as IAO, we are standing for our main aim, and that's making sure that there is academic recognition. And our aim is to train our students here within our facilities to the highest possible academic degree, which is a Master of Science degree, making sure that they can work as independent, safe, and knowledgeable osteopaths, making sure that their treatments are safe, but also making sense. Of course, what we see is that now there are a lot of talks going on in Germany for the recognition of the profession. If we look to the Nordic countries, a lot of work has already done. I think they're doing a great job in regards to the recognition of our profession. If you ask it personally to me, I would say that we would go for a recognition of the profession. That's my aim. Go for that recognition, work together with the schools, but only if there is a recognition, we can make our profession sustainable for the future and also deserve that place within the healthcare system. Able then, of course, as well to communicate with other healthcare professionals. So there is a better, quicker date, and even make sure that our patients can benefit from that. Again, that's not for the IAO, so it's not the responsibility of the IAO, of course. That's the professional associations that have to take care of. But we as school are very willing to discuss it with them, to give our opinion and visions on that. What we are doing already for many years is training our students to the highest standards. As we are an international school, we apply one program for all these countries to make sure they are highly qualified. And then, of course, they are still depending on the additional requests from their country, like you said, in Germany, where the Heilpraktiker is until today needed.
In which country you currently see the best state of affairs? You said already Nordic countries have a very good regulations about osteopathy. Can you elaborate a little bit?
Well, I think if you go on the internet and you look it up, you will find a lot of information about that. If you look to the Nordic countries, especially, for example, where we are teaching as well, which is Copenhagen, so Denmark, there it's an officially recognized profession. The associations in Denmark did a very great job there that osteopathy is recognized within a clear framework, allowing our graduated students to work there within a safe and clear framework. And that's a very nice thing, because there was being an osteopath means that you're part of that healthcare system. And you avoid that other persons who didn't attend any training or a dropout student who started a few years but stopped it also named him or herself an osteopath, which can make it very dangerous. So Denmark did a great job other Nordic countries are doing the same. The rest is still waiting a bit. In Netherlands, a lot of talks are going on about how we should regulate it and what regulation and recognition means. Is it the same or is it equal? It's not the same, in my opinion. Eh? So that's another discussion. You can regulate a profession or you can recognize some profession. And there are also a lot of talks going on. But again, it's not us as IAO being part of that. We can be part of that in the way of we can communicate and be part of discussions. But it's again for the professional associations to pick it up with the local governments and to start the discussions there.
In your opinion, since we're also talking about regulations, what an osteopath should be able to do? What kind of rights should be given? Should be able to write a person sick? Should be able to prescribe painkillers forward to a patient or order an MRI? Like, what kind of rights, in your opinion, do you think are necessary or good to have in order to practice osteopathy to its full potential?
Yeah, it's a difficult question because you cannot with you compare the DO degree of the United States, where it's just a medical training. It's a totally different context apart to the DO degree in Europe. So again, what I said earlier, osteopathy is not a collection of techniques for me. So I would not set a limitation of techniques. We need to be able to perform the art of osteopathy, which should allow us to use a broad collection of techniques, but within a clear and well-defined framework, where we can clearly communicate within the profession, but also with other healthcare professionals. So they understand us and we understand them. And for me, it's mostly about focusing on clinical reasoning, being able to work as a safe practitioner, so a safe osteopath, and the professional boundary should be set clearly. And this is something that, again, the professional associations should talk through with other associations of other healthcare professionals. But I believe interprofessional working is essential. So collaboration with other healthcare professionals is key. And what is really the boundary? Well, that's something we have to discuss together with the associations. Of course, we should not replace the medical doctor, but we should be able to work with them. And if we see need for something, that at least there is a possibility to communicate with that medical doctor. And I think until today, a lot of osteopaths feel that the door is closed between them and other medical professionals. And if we open these doors and there is communication, then it's not about what we as an osteopath should be able to do. No, it's what we should be able to communicate, because I strongly believe that we are extremely proud of being an osteopath. And we are well-trained. We know a lot and we should be proud of that. We all attended a long training. We have a lot of knowledge. We have a lot of experience. We work on a daily basis with patients and we play a valid role in also the diagnosis of some specific topics, which until today we are not allowed to. But maybe there we can play a role together with the general practitioner. Also keeping an eye on how the healthcare system is progressing. They don't have much time anymore. We don't have enough medical professionals for the future. I think there is a chance, there is also an opportunity that we as an osteopath can play a much more valid role in that circle of healthcare. Setting our professional boundaries very clearly and making sure that everyone is trained and has the valid papers in hand to work as an osteopath.
What is also like a very common question or people wonder about, should osteopathy be a service which is compensated by the health insurance, or should it be a cash pay or like private pay service? Because in Germany, for example, it's mostly a cash pay service where people pay for the service. Sometimes they get a reimbursement, sometimes not. In other countries, I think in Belgium, if I'm not wrong, get reimbursements for your treatments. But with reimbursements comes restrictions. Let's say you only have an amount of that you have to set for the treatment. Where do you stand personally? Like, do you think it is a good thing that osteopathy is mostly a private and cash-based service, or should it be more regulated and be offered as a health insurance service which is available to anyone?
Well, that's a very difficult question, and I'm not sure if I can answer that question, to be honest. Because of course what I want is not what they have as a possibility. Let's turn the question into the other direction. I believe that osteopathy deserves a place in the healthcare, and however that is regulated, I don't know, to be honest. I'm not aware on how it works in all these different countries. But it deserves a place in healthcare, and osteopathy should be accessible for everyone. So if it means that if you just pay it by cash, as you mentioned it, and it's too expensive for a certain group within the community, that then it's not my preference, because I strongly believe that everyone should benefit from what we do as an osteopath. But again, it's not up to me any suggestions on, because I don't know enough about it, to be honest, to get there one sense of an answer.
As you had mentioned before, you have joined as a joint principal the EAO Academy. What kind of changes have you implemented already after getting the new position at the EAO? And where do you see your mission at the organization, and where do you want to head that organization to head?
Yeah, good question. As you all know, so I'm trained as an osteopath, but I had that interest in education, equality, but also the profession future-proof and how we can do that. So that's one of the reasons why I've chosen to become a joint principal, because I strongly believe in what we are doing. I'm strongly standing behind the philosophy of our academy. And to be open with you, being a joint principal doesn't mean from above. Of course, I have to lead the company, make sure that all the processes are working. But it means what we truly have and what truly matters in osteopathy. So looking to the future, looking to the different stakeholders, and also being flexible on adapting. And again, there comes the same words, to adapt on what is happening within all the countries today delivering our courses. If new changes are coming from the government, we need to adapt as a school. So be able to adapt is where I strongly believe in, and that's what we are doing as IAO today. And I think that I have the luck, the chance for such a beautiful company established in 1987 by Grégoire Lazon. Of course, we are now working together. Grégoire has a lot of expertise, a lot of knowledge, and I bring maybe sometimes a different perspective, a different connection, different background, and that works very nicely together, I have to say. And this makes it even better for the IAO, because the IAO might benefit from it. So we are making plans for the future. Some things we're already adapting to is to start the Master of Science program in Germany. So we made that happen. Until last year, we only offered the DO program. From next year onwards, we will convert that to the Master of Science program. That's one thing. Another thing is that working on the teacher's side, we are training our teachers. We put them in teaching groups more about different topics to have an eye on the research field, to be able to adapt the research into our education. And we also made sure that the scientific part of osteopathy, within our school, is well established in our training programs. So very happy for that as well. And for the things are at the moment, we are having talks with our students. We are looking to all our stakeholders. We are positively working on, like I said earlier, new plans on maybe changing some learning and teaching methods within the IAO. We are currently working on a super nice learning management system, and that will be ready soon for our students. So a lot of good things are happening. In terms of the vision, I think I can say that the vision we have will remain the same vision because it's still relevant, it's still valid. We want to train professionals into safe, competent practitioners, osteopaths, within a clearly defined educational field, which has an eye for the ethical aspect to be safe, safe and open. Everyone and is welcome within our academy. And that's such a nice thing that we have such a diverse population within the IEO, also from the teacher's perspective, but also from the student perspective. And this makes me smile actually every day because when I see them learn and interact with each other and talking about my passion, which is osteopathy, then I become happy as well. And being able to safeguard that and make it sustainable for the future, yeah, that makes me actually super happy.
Since joining the new role, are you still practicing osteopathy or teaching, or is the new role overall encompassing so that you stop practicing osteopathy? Are you still doing manual work?
So I'm still working as an osteopath. I'm also still teaching at the IEO within different different topics. So I combine the two, and I truly believe it's very essential to keep on teaching because then I know what is happening on the field. I know what the needs of the students are, but I also have a passion for teaching, not like it to lose it. Doing that over the next years, I'm always very happy after one teaching a module because it's super nice if you can bring the passion out the students, and if you see that they are triggered or passionate about osteopathy. And working in the clinic is because it brings me experience and expertise, but I also see there how, for example, patients are changing, questions from patients are changing, the demands of the patients, and how to make the transfer from us as a school to what students really need to become a good practitioner. And to have an eye on all these different contexts is very important for me and is a rich chance I have to be able to combine it as well.
You already mentioned that the questions of patients are changing, just as of students, as you have mentioned before. Can you elaborate a little bit on these changes? What has shifted? Does that something has to do with the development of our technology or more of a societal society change? Like, what are the changes?
I can name many changes, and I think one we are all aware of is the implementation of AI tools within education, but also the use of AI by our patients. So nowadays, if a patient comes to your clinic, they are already, I have to say, well informed. They come with already an answer from, for example, ChatGPT. So you have to be well prepared as well to tackle that. On the other hand, I see it as an opportunity because, of course, we cannot have the ambition that we know everything, but we should be triggered and curious about something and know how to find our good information, which tools we can use for that, but also be critical on what we read everywhere. This is very important. And also that AI, for example, is something we see now being used by our students. But there again lies an opportunity for us as IEO to train our students on how to use AI appropriate in the setting of an osteopath. And then we can all benefit from it because we can learn quicker. They can use it as a relevant tool if they don't forget the rationale behind it, if they remain critical and reflective on what they read, that they should not always believe what AI says. Then it's an asset, making them learn much faster. This brings also the fact in that students are much more critical of what they do. They question themselves much more than in the past, which is a good thing. From a student perspective, sometimes as a teacher, it is a bit more challenging because you need to be aware of this input that is given by the students again, we cannot always give them an answer, which is totally fine, but we should be able to reflect on that, on the input they gave us, and not put it on a side, but try to overlook it in the teacher groups. And if it's a relevant point, maybe also implement it in our curriculum. So that's one thing. Another thing is that students and the way how they learn, it's different. They're not reading that much books anymore, for example. They like also to have pre-recorded lectures, to be able to look into their techniques digitally. So it's changing everything. And also the time investment they have to do becomes sometimes for some of the students more and more challenging. Because I think we are all aware that life is getting much more expensive. So we need to keep on working during our education. And it's not so easy to say, oh, let's move from full-time to part-time so I have a bit more time to combine it with my training. I see there as well the challenges for our students. And we are aware of that as a school. And I think we have to be proud on the fact that we are open to discuss this with our students to always try to find a solution for that in terms of, for example, giving them a break in their trainings, allowing them to have a rest and then after 1 or 2 years, recontinue their studies. If I dive back to the patient's perspective, I worked in the Netherlands. I don't work in Belgium as an osteopath. And in the Netherlands, we see that the healthcare system is overloaded by demands that cannot be fulfilled by the regular medical care. So it means that more and more patients are looking for different options to get an answer on their complaints. And one of these options is being an osteopath, because we have to agree that patients are happy about the osteopaths. If we look to the research papers about it, and if you look to the outcome of professional societies, we see that the patients overall are very positive about an osteopathic treatment. And if I look to the last published paper by the professional association in Belgium, we even see that there is a huge increase in how many people are an osteopath. So it's the largest increase in not regulated healthcare professions, and that's osteopathy. So we should be proud of that as well. But meaning on the same time that we get questions, we should be for a general practitioner. So knowing our barrier, our therapeutical barrier, becomes essential because the questions of patients might go over that. And that's a risk. But at the same time, if we train our students for that, then they are aware of it. But it's changing. It's changing a lot.
So as you have mentioned, more and more people are actually going to use and have an osteopathic treatment. Where do you see a red line for a patient? Like, what kind of patients should not be foregoing an osteopathic treatment and should be sent further?
Oh, that's a difficult question to answer, because I have so many examples where we have to reconsider it. To be clear with you, we need to make sure that we know our red flags, and a red flag can come from a medical history, so from an intake. If we hear something like a new headache, I have this for the first time, that's not an indication for an osteopath. To be sure, you should refer them to a medical doctor. But also trauma, accident after a fall, yeah, they don't need to visit an osteopath if they have an injury somewhere. At least it should be checked by a medical professional, by a GP, yeah, or a referral to a hospital, for example. So the medical history can bring us a lot of red flags, but also all our osteopaths who graduated at the IO are trained good examination. And if they find some deductions of these examinations that are not clear, then they also have to refer the patient. If I convert the question again, at IO, we train our osteopaths to know what the barrier is and when to act accordingly to that. And knowing these red flags are important, but yeah, I can give 1,000 examples where we could refer them. It's all depending on the case. And all depending on the knowledge of the osteopath on to know when to stop and to refer back to, for example, a GP.
Is there a question that students usually never ask but want to ask that comes to mind?
Oh, That's a very difficult question. Can you repeat it again? So a question that comes to the mind of a student?
Let's say most students are usually not either self-confident or able to formulate some questions properly. But some issue comes up again and again, but since it's never been asked or formulated properly, it might be important. Something comes to mind you would like to...
Well, if I can share something, it's not the correct, if there is a correct answer, but maybe it's not the answer to the question. But sometimes I see the doubt in the eyes of a student that they are afraid because it's not regulated, not recognized yet. In some countries, at least, sometimes you end in discussions with other healthcare professionals where they doubt about what we are doing. But if I can say one thing to the students, but also to the osteopaths, is be proud on what you're doing, know your limitations, and don't underestimate what you're doing. We are all well-trained as osteopaths. We are all knowledgeable. We have a lot of background. Also very curious people, at least most of us. We look a bit beyond the source of complaint, and this is a strength. So act accordingly. Act accordingly to the strengths we have, and we can be proud of being osteopaths. We do a great job. We are appreciated by our patients. We see the effect, the positive effect of our treatments, even though not everything is yet researched. We see it on a daily basis, what the improvements can be after some sessions, and stick to that. Stick to your beliefs, and we are strong. We are a strong group. We are all proud on what we are doing, and we can become stronger in the future if we all stand behind the same story. And that's my vision.
Yeah. Now we're coming slowly to the end of the podcast. Is there something you would like to share with our listeners, something that you would always wanted to tell but never had an option to?
All these difficult questions, Ivan.
At the end.
What I want to share, I want to thank you, first of all, that I can be here, that I can introduce myself and explain a bit more about my vision and passion, which is osteopathy and anatomy. And what I want to share to the listeners is that we have a great future in Germany ahead, and that we are making nice plans. As I said, we are starting with the Master of Science soon, but also on in terms of post-academic modules, we are making progresses now. We are going to offer again a lot of post-academic modules there. I'm very excited actually to work together with our very motivated and highly skilled teachers team, which I'm very proud of, and didn't say that yet, but I'm super proud of our teacher team. A teachers team, because it consists of many teachers in Germany, and I strongly stand behind them, and I truly believe that we have the knowledge in hand to make something nice for the future. I want to take it from there and end it in a very positive way. As IAO, we are ready for the future, and we are preparing for everything which comes ahead.
Thank you so much, Jörg, for your time and your expertise. We had a very interesting conversation, and I think we dive deep into many topics which consider osteopathy and the EAO organization. If you want to know more about EAO, we will link it down below in the description, and you can find out more about Jörg and also the work of EAO. If you like the podcast, please share with anyone who would find the information useful or interesting. Thank you so much, and till next time.